Hi, listeners. This is a quick thank you for listening and for your ongoing support. If you're enjoying the program, please consider clicking the follow or subscribe button if you haven't done so already. It really helps us out. There's no better way to support us than doing that or sharing the show with a friend, colleague, family member, or any new or expecting parent in your life. It's totally appreciated. On with the show. Hi, I'm Sarah Trott, and welcome to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm a new mama, and this podcast is all about postpartum care for the first few months following birth, the time period also known as the fourth trimester. My postpartum doula, Esther Gallagher, is my co-host. She's a mother, grandmother, perinatal educator, birth and postpartum care provider. Fourth trimester care, our topic, is about the practical, emotional, and social support parents and baby require. And importantly, it helps set the tone for the continuing journey of parenting. Hi, welcome back to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. This is Sarah Trott, and I'm here to talk to you about an interesting topic about home birth versus hospital birth. And we have the best guest to discuss this, who is Jessica Moore, who is a documentary filmmaker. And I'll introduce her in just a moment. Just a quick reminder, we have a newsletter you can sign up for at fourthtrimesterpodcast.com. Please do that if you haven't done so far. And also check out our website and our Patreon sponsorship page. We're welcoming all of our listeners to contribute as little as a dollar an episode to our podcast to help us improve our technology, which we desperately need, actually. Esther knows, she's laughing. So Jessica Moore, we're so honored to have her. So Jessica is a family nurse practitioner set on a journey by her own home birth experiences. She created the feature-length documentary, Why Not Home?, about nurses and doctors who attend birth in the hospital and have their own children at home.
Yay!
Yeah, amazing. The film is being released on iTunes and Amazon on Labor Day. That's Labor Day of 2017. So she is a transplant from the Midwest, and she and her husband have made their home in Sonoma County, California, where she tries to keep up with her two children, six chickens, and two sheep. So over to you, Jessica and Esther. I would love to hear a little bit of an intro in your own words, Jessica.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I'm glad to be here. So, as you mentioned, I was trained as a family nurse practitioner, and I practice at a community health center. And it wasn't until I was pregnant myself and started looking at my options that I really even considered home birth. I had become familiar with midwifery care in the hospital through my training. And then after I moved to Petaluma, I had a colleague and friend who was a labor and delivery nurse and had had both of her children at home. And then when I was pregnant and started looking at what my options were, started, you know, talking to others to see what their experiences were, I thought that, you know, there were really some benefits to home birth that I wanted to explore further. So I also looked at a local birth center and thought that, you know, that looked like a great option as well. But when it came down to it, I thought, well, it's kind of like somebody else's home. And I think I would just be more comfortable in my own home with people that I know and trust. And you know, looked at the evidence and saw that for low-risk women, the outcomes were just as good in many cases. And for some variables, the outcomes were better at home. And it was just about kind of choosing the set of risks that I was most comfortable accepting. And so chose to have both of my children at home, had amazing experiences with both of them. Actually, after my first birth, I thought, you know, that was so much better than I thought it could be. I think that was a one-off, you know, like that can't be how birth really is, because it was so different than what our our culture and what the narrative around birth is typically. And it wasn't until I had my second daughter and had an equally amazing experience that I thought, you know, I really want to dig into this a little bit more and tell this story in a different way. I had also had another colleague and friend, a family doctor who I worked with, who had had her daughter at home, and I was able to be with her for that birth. And, you know, we had both encountered, you know, when we were pregnant, come into this situation where, you know, we felt confident in our decision, but at the same time, we didn't really want to share it with all of our colleagues because of the stigma and the judgment that really still in many communities, and especially in medicine, can surround home birth. So that's kind of what sparked this journey for me.
That's great. I think the title is brilliant. and I especially love that there's, you know, that the primary subjects are people who work within the American medical system, mm-hmm. or at least the California one.
Yeah. We definitely talked to, you know, women, a doctor in Colorado and a labor and delivery nurse in Florida and, you know, go to Boston University and talk to some experts there, Eugene DeClercq and Candace Belanoff and Seattle to the Home Birth Summit. So, it definitely started as sort of like my community and people that I knew kind of in Northern California. And then it kind of grew to really look at what's going on across the country.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about the movie, the documentary, is just the whole feel of it. It's just so gentle and positive, and there's nothing sensational about it. Other than the fact that I just get so jazzed by the whole topic and always have for 40 years now. I think it doesn't take the tack of trying to scare anybody into a home birth, which
at least that's really not the feeling to me. And I wasn't in the business of shaming anybody, or, you know, if you don't have a home birth, you know, like there's something wrong with that. Like everyone should have a home birth, or like hospitals are terrible, you know, doctors are bad. Like I was not interested in that conversation at all, because I think a lot of that happens and there's a lot of polarization, on the topic. And what I felt like was really missing was some, a voice of moderation and just kind of looking at the evidence in a non-judgmental way and a really honest way to say, you know, these are real choices that we can make. And, you know, this is the evidence for home birth, and this is what, you know, physicians and nurses and midwives who are practicing in hospitals see, and this is why they chose to give birth at home. It's not a fringe decision. It's not a crazy decision. It's not something that they made. It's not a decision they made out of fear either, because I think that happens sometimes too. You know, women hear horror stories about hospitals and they think, oh no, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with that. I think hospitals are great in many cases. And when I need a hospital, I want the hospital to be there. But when, you know, if I don't need the hospital, you know, I'm a low risk mom and I feel like home birth, again, fits my needs and values, and I'm I have appropriate care with a trained professional, then, you know, there's nothing to fear about that decision either. And that was the other thing that always surprised me, you know, after having my kids at home, when I would just sort of meet people with my new baby or whatever, and say, oh, you know, where did you have your baby? And I'd say, like, you know, at home. And, oh, you're so brave, or wow, like I could never do that. Or, you know, everybody has a story. Oh my goodness. Well, I almost died. I would have died if I hadn't been in the hospital. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe that's true and maybe that's not. And, you know, if oftentimes, and what I heard over and over again from the doctors and nurses who I interviewed for the film is that, you know, oftentimes if you weren't in the hospital, things may have gone really differently from the start. So it's really not a fair comparison to say, you know, if I hadn't been, in many cases, you know, if I hadn't been in the hospital, I would have died. But that was definitely kind of the story that was told to me growing up too. I was born by C-section. I was breech, and my brother after me was also born C-section because my mom had already had one C-section. And you know, my dad always definitely felt like, you know, if you had been, you know, born years ago before they had C-section, so you and your mom both would have died. And maybe that's true, and maybe it's not. You know, breech vaginal deliveries do happen.
There I was born that way.
Yeah, right. So you know, no one knows what would have happened, but the risks are often much overplayed.
Yes. So. Yeah. Well, and I just want to say that, not to put too fine a point on the part about shaming and fearing, that when I had my daughter at home 39 years ago, excuse me, you know, I just thought, gosh, when my daughter's ready to have babies, home birth is going to be the norm.
Right.
You know, we'll have put in place a system where women who are moderate to high risk will be seen by obstetricians and deliver in hospital settings because that's what's safest for them. Mm-hmm. And women who otherwise aren't moderate to high risk won't think twice. Mm-hmm. In fact, my fantasy was that it wouldn't really actually be an option. You'd have your baby at home, like everywhere else in the world, practically. So, you know, here we are 40 years later, and I'm just scratching my head. And while I appreciate some of the films that have been made, I have to say, until your film, I wasn't so comfortable with the way that we talk about this option, which is to have babies at home. So thank you very much for making the movie. And, you know, our podcast is about postpartum, the fourth trimester. And I think we've talked about the midwifery model of care on this podcast before, more than once. And we've talked about it primarily in terms of, I would say, leading up to birth. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about it in terms of if you had a nurse midwife in a hospital setting, the kind of postpartum care they would offer you. Mm-hmm. But we haven't really done a deep dive into what home birth postpartum care looks like. Mm-hmm. And since you got to experience it and I got to experience it, we're in the perfect position to be able to describe it to our listeners. And I think they'd find it very interesting.
Sure.
So go right ahead.
So I think that is something that often scares people. I think especially partners sometimes about, you know, having a home birth is like, oh my goodness, that's going to be like such a huge mess and I'll have to clean up and then there won't be anybody to help. And what if, like, you know, I've never had a baby before. Like, I don't know how to take care of a baby and you're just going to like leave me. There's not going to be a nurse there all the time or, and, you know, the great thing about one of the great things about, you know, midwifery care, especially in a continuity kind of home birth model, is that, you know, you're planning to, you know, to give birth at home with, you know, people who you want to be there. You know, maybe you're going to invite a friend there to also support you or a family member or something. But the midwives are really focused around helping you to build that support system and to really think about what postpartum is going to look like. And, you know, and they don't leave you right away either. You know, they clean everything up, they check you, they check the baby, they stay as long as they need to, and, you know, help you get started with breastfeeding. And then, you know, depending on how long you've been in labor and how long, you know, they've been there or what time it is, you know, they leave you to sleep a bit, then they're going to come back and check on you in 24 hours typically. And then again in a couple days, then again a week late, you know, so you get to really just have that experience of those first few days bonding at home and never having to, you know, futz with the car seat and the newborn baby and, you know, taking them anywhere. And
which is you know, I've said many times, Jessica, you know, on this side of pregnancy, if you're still pregnant, none of that seems like a big deal.
Right.
But when
right.
you've pushed a baby out your perineum, like it yeah. is actually kind of a big deal. And
right,
so
right.
that's, I mean, that's just one of the benefits that I think is huge. But I want to sort of reel it back a tiny bit and talk about, you know, that those first hours mm-hmm. postpartum and the mm-hmm. fact that most people don't understand that after labor and birth, most babies are going to crawl around and find a breast, mm-hmm. hook up to it, have a nice long nurse, gaze lovingly at their parents, squawk here and there. But at some point in that first, usually 12 to 24 hours, your baby is going to have one really long restorative sleep.
Yeah.
So it can
absolutely.
Be 6 hours of sleep. And there's nowhere else on the planet that you can also get that restorative sleep that you
yes.
need so badly if you're
yep.
the parents and have been making your way through labor, particularly if it's a longish labor mm-hmm. or if you started at night after a full day's mm-hmm. Busyness and didn't get that next night's sleep or whatever,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
going to be your 4 to 6 hour window to actually get your mental health back.
Yeah, right. Nobody's going to bother you to take your blood pressure, check your temperature,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. yeah.
No,
and
absolutely.
That will be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that will, you know, because if you had shown symptoms of having
right.
a problem,
right.
or if you show symptoms of having a problem, you will know who to call. They will respond immediately, etc. So I think between the car seat and the sleep alone,
yeah,
the whole birth model
for partners
of care
too. Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I mean, I have a great picture immediately postpartum with my daughter. I mean, you know, she was nursing, and I was so like pumped up on kind of adrenaline, you know, after the
sure.
birth. Like I wasn't ready to go to sleep yet, but my husband is like sitting there kind of propped up in bed, in our bed, you know, next mm-hmm. to me, like totally asleep. And
yeah.
and that was just fine, you know. It was like
yes.
it was our place, and he was comfortable and everybody was good. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just it's hard to replicate the comfort and the, you know, the sense of control and safety, really, that, you know, that you kind of feel in your own home, kind of on your own terms.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And why don't we talk just a little bit more, if you don't mind, about the kind of care you're experiencing from your midwife on those, that initial postpartum, and then the subsequent postpartum visits that happen within the first 6 weeks. Reminding
sure.
our listeners that when you leave the hospital on day two, you won't see an obstetrician again for 6 weeks unless there's some serious problem, so-called.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, the midwife will usually come back in, you know, 24 to 48 hours. And it's a kind of a combination of great, you know, lactation support and then, you know, making sure that, you know, your physical recovery is going okay. And also that you are kind of making the transition that you need to make, you know, from woman to mother. And, you know, in terms of your, you know, your mood, you know, do you have the support system set up that you need? Are you sleeping? How can we get your home set up in a way? Because they're coming to your home typically. You know, how can we make this environment more conducive to, you know, sleep? Because that's sleep for you, the baby, you know, your nutrition, like that really it's a very holistic model.
We call that healing and recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just hard to replicate. I think a lot of midwives and doctors want to do that for their patients postpartum, but the system just isn't set up to support that. You know, that the amount of time that it takes to give that care is just more than most office practices are allowed, unfortunately.
I think that's a great description. And I think it's sometimes a little difficult for people to appreciate that not having to leave your home for these services and supports is in itself therapeutic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you're having difficulty with breastfeeding, if your perineum was wounded in the process of birth, which it often is, and that's normal,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but requires rest in order to heal and recover. Having somebody come to you and assess rather than disrupt the flow of what's happening
right.
in your life
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
is a huge boon.
Mm-hmm.
It's just no small thing at all.
Yeah.
So,
And the other thing that happens, I think, at those visits that I think is so important and healing too, is just, you know, usually there's a chance to kind of talk about the birth and process the birth together, you know, with your midwife that was there, whether it was, you know, a difficult birth or a fast birth or a long birth or easy, you know, kind of to really tell that story and to frame that and process that with somebody who was there. And that in and of itself can be very healing and important. And I really recommend that, you know, wherever you give birth and whoever your care provider is, that you, in the postpartum time, you know, do find a venue to tell the story of your birth. And, you know, I'm sure that you guys have talked about this before, you know, write it down because you think you'll never forget. But the details do fade quickly, and those stories are important. And you know, again, whether it was hard or easy, all that is part of the story. So I always encourage people to do that as well.
I think it's important for us to be witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
And while hospital staff are wonderful people and may indeed be putting whatever attention they have available on witnessing what's going on, typically, let's face it, their job is to document it. And that's a little different than being present for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And while I certainly have had the experience of working with hospital staff as a birth doula who clearly can hold both roles, mm-hmm, even when mm-hmm. that's true, and they can do that, there are opportunities for coming back around and witnessing with their client after the birth are constrained. Right?
Yeah,
they may or may not have a shift
right
in the postpartum days, the 2 days that you are at the hospital waiting to go home. They may or may not actually get an opportunity to see you again. So then that opportunity is lost for the client, for the mom and partner, too. So,
yeah. So my good friend Denise, who is a labor and delivery nurse and had her children at home, she was at both of my births, and she always says her favorite thing about a home birth is that, you know, she doesn't have to do any charting. She can just really be there with the mom. And yeah, you know, she would love to be able to do that in the hospital, but there are, you know, requirements, and they're there for a reason too. But it does interfere with the way that nurses are often able to support a mom and a family in a birth.
I just wanted to kind of comment on that a little bit and ask another question around it. So it sounds like, I mean, what you're describing is a lot of interesting options for people to consider. So any of our listeners who are expecting to have a baby, or maybe are thinking about having a baby or a second baby sometime in the future, or third or fourth or whatever. I mean, it sounds like they have a lot of interesting options to consider. And I like hearing you highlighting some of the things that I know I personally didn't get exposed to as concepts when I was preparing for my first birth. But, you know, I just have this one simple question. I don't know if it has a simple answer, but like, why is it that healthcare professionals, are they themselves choosing home births?
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit different for every person. And of course, you know, not all health professionals are choosing home birth, clearly. But I think for the ones that are, you know, what I heard from many of them is that they're really keenly aware of the risks that are inherent in birth. And they are not under any illusion that there is a way to eliminate risk just based on the setting. So there are risks to having a birth in the hospital. There are risks to having a birth at home. And, you know, they know what birth looks like. They've seen it in the hospital. They understand kind of the constraints and the environment that births in the hospital kind of require currently, and they've chosen a different path for themselves. You know, a lot of times I hear that it was really important that they kind of know who was going to be there and only have people that they want there. Also, a lot of people talk about kind of the interruptions that happen in a hospital, you know, people coming in and out to check or empty the garbage or bring a tray, or, you know, I mean, there's just like constant kind of in and out. And it's hard to do the work of labor if you don't feel safe and comfortable with your surroundings and you're constantly being disrupted. I mean, it happens a lot. You'll hear labor and delivery nurses say, or even a lot of times moms, you know, will think, I was really in labor at home. I was having, you know, regular contractions, and then I went to the hospital and everything stopped, you know, because there's this response often that says, you know, wait, this isn't my space. I'm not sure what's going on here. You know, I'm not sure that this is safe. I'm not sure that I can do this intimate thing. You know, maybe it's not, I'm sure that it's not safe, but it's a very intimate thing that you're going to do, you know, to give birth, to a child. And there are just some real challenges to doing that in an institutional setting. That being said, for a lot of people, they are more comfortable in the hospital, and that is absolutely where they want to be. And they would not be comfortable at home. You know, they would think my home is going to get dirty, or somebody's going to hear me, or I'm the kind of person that I just want everything to be there, right there in case I need it. You know, I would just feel terrible if something happened at home, you know? So I think that you have to be just really honest with yourself and think, okay, what risk, again, am I willing to accept? What are the things that I value, and where can those things best happen for me? For some people, that's going to be at home. Some people, that might be at a birth center. And for some people, that's going to be the hospital. And that's fine. I think that we can all learn from each other and practitioners. You know, one of my goals is also that home birth and hospital providers just are able to work more closely together, to collaborate together, because really at the end of the day, we all have the same goals. You know, we want healthy moms and babies with positive experiences that help them, you know, launch into motherhood. And so how can we support all women and families in doing that in the setting that's right for them?
Hi, listeners. I have some exciting news to share with you today. We've partnered with Every Mother, your go-to destination for evidence-based exercise therapy regimens. Whether you're dealing with diastasis recti, preparing for birth, or navigating postpartum recovery, Every Mother has your back. With personalized daily routines tailored to your core and pelvic floor needs, they're here to support you every step of the way. Say hello to a stronger, healthier you with Every Mother. Visit their website today and use code FOURTHTRIMESTER10 for 10% off your personalized regimen. That's fourth spelled out, FOURTH, trimester10 for 10% off, because every mother deserves the very best.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. What about possible benefits of home birth that may not be obvious? I mean, there's probably a cost aspect.
Sure. Just in terms of cost, you know, it's this interesting thing that we have in the United States that you have the cost to the individual and then the cost to the system. And they're two very different things. So while I believe it's something like, it's only like 3 or 4% of births in the hospital are paid for by individuals out of pocket. It's closer to 70% of home births are paid for by the individual out of pocket because so few insurances cover it. So even though it is less expensive, significantly less expensive to the system, if you're looking at it from a high level position, you know, it's depending on where you live, anywhere between $4,000 and $6,000 for a home birth. That includes your prenatal care, your delivery, your postpartum care, and, you know, a regular vaginal birth in the hospital is going to be like $15,000 to $18,000. But most individuals aren't going to see that cost because their insurance is going to pick it up. But if we really had a healthcare system that was interested in reducing costs to the system across the board, then I think there would be a much bigger push to include home birth as one of the options. You know, healthcare systems where they have like a national healthcare system, like England or parts of Canada, you know, in British Columbia. When you're pregnant and you go in for your first prenatal visit, you know, you'll see a midwife and the midwife will offer you, you know, do you want to, these are kind of your options and this is what you'll get in each place. And you can have this baby in the hospital or a birth center or at home. You know, what does it look like, you know, you'd like to explore and what fits your risk profile and your needs. And we just don't have a system anywhere close to that right now.
But by the way, Bernie Sanders is introducing a single payer healthcare federal bill very soon. Mm-hmm. So people get behind this. Yeah, it gives more healthcare for no money.
Yeah. I think that until, you know, and I'm definitely not saying that, like, you know, doctors are trying to get rich by, you know, doing more C-sections or whatever. Like I'm not interested in going that way. I don't want to blame physicians. And at the same time, there isn't an incentive in our current system for low cost, high quality care. We're incentivized to do more, and you're paid more for doing more. Hospitals are paid more for doing more. You know, in some cases, physicians are paid more for doing more. You know, when there's a, you know, normal vaginal birth, like you were there and supported, you know, our system doesn't recognize that as work or as valuable, right? As like, oh no, you did the C-section, or you did the epidural or whatever, you know, like all of those things are additional interventions that incur more cost.
I have to wonder, and this is again not a judgment call, but you'd have to wonder, like, what would happen if unnecessary, and I'm calling it unnecessary. I don't think that there's this. It's not with a judgment, but if we talk about something like epidurals, right? Anesthesia for surgery, that would be necessary. Anesthetic, to deliver your baby, in your mind may feel pretty necessary, but how necessary is it? If we all had to pay for some of these choices that we're making in a direct fashion, rather than paying high premiums.
Sure.
That we never actually see back. You know, we've definitely paid for that epidural a few times by the time we get it.
Right.
But people don't think in those terms, right?
Yeah, right.
Unfortunately, what they think in terms of is, I've already paid my Kaiser, Anthem, or whatever premium, and having a home birth would be extra.
Right. Yeah. Because that's how it is for most people right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they might not think paying an extra $2 for snazzier coffee at the snazzier coffee shop. You get my drift.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I think I just want to say on a helpful note, I think all of this is coming into the consciousness deeper or more broadly in our culture. I hope that's the case. Sadly, the statistics are still pretty poor, even though we've had home birth, legal midwifery care home birth in California since 1992. I guess we need a few more years before that's going to take hold and we'll see better statistics.
I mean, still across the country, you know, only, I believe it's up to 29 states now that license certified professional midwives, you know, to do births at home. And so there are, you know, there are a lot of places where it's legal for you to have your baby, you know, at home if there's nobody with you, but it's not okay for a midwife to attend that birth. So, yeah.
For a woman to practice healthcare.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole long, deep discussion has racist, absolutely, sexist undertones maybe for another podcast.
Sounds good.
So I'm just looking at the American Pregnancy Association's website, and they say, and I'm quoting, home birth provides immediate bonding and breastfeeding. Early breastfeeding helps the mother stop bleeding, clears mucus from the baby's nose and mouth, and transfers disease-fighting antibodies in the milk from mother to baby. And I think that's interesting that they list this as under the bullet of home birth benefits.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, I think that it's that particular benefit is something that I think more and more hospitals are becoming aware of. And, you know, a lot of hospitals now are getting like a baby friendly designation that, you know, promotes immediate skin to skin and breastfeeding and, you know, they're not suctioning unless it's really necessary. And so I think a lot of the things that we have been doing at home for a long time and do promote bonding and work, I think actually some of those practices are transferring over to the hospital and have shown real benefit to those. But clearly that's not the standard at every hospital. And it's really important if you're planning to give birth at the hospital that you know what their practices are around the immediate postpartum time. And, you know, not just what your doctor tells you, but what actually happens. And, you know, I have a friend who says, you know, works with an obstetrician and says, oh yeah, you know, she tells all of her patients that she really supports natural childbirth. But if you ask her how many, you know, out of the 10 last deliveries she had that were unmedicated natural, like, it's not many, you know. So there's sometimes a difference between you know, the story that's told and the numbers. And as much as you can, you know, get your hands on the numbers, there's a great website that will give you your hospital's C-section rate, and that is a better predictor of whether or not you will have a C-section than almost anything else, just what hospital you go to, because there are certain, you know, standards, protocols, procedures that are going to push a birth in one direction or another. So I think it's really important to just have all of the information you can about wherever you're going to give birth.
Well, I know what Esther's going to say, because we've just been talking about this in our birth intentions or birth plan document episode. But okay. Before you dive in, Esther, can I just say, I completely agree. When I read that on the American Pregnancy Association site, I immediately thought, well, I don't necessarily equate that immediate bonding time as being something that's one or the other. Like, it's not mutually exclusive.
Right.
It's not just hospitals or, you know, it's not black and white.
Well, what Sarah knows I was going to say is that it's my experience as a birth and postpartum doula that there is one protocol that is taught in teaching hospitals, essentially, and that is learned by obstetrical students and some nurse midwifery students, which is to not only give quote-unquote prophylactic Pitocin at the end of birth, which is mildly controversial in and of itself, and that's called active management of third stage. Mm-hmm. But the practices of actually actively manipulating the mother's body, her uterus, pulling on the cord of the placenta to determine whether or not it's released yet, these are practices that, so far as I know, in the home birth setting would just be verboten.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Perhaps not the Pitocin if necessary.
If sure, sure.
Right. But this is not a protocol that everybody is subjected to, no matter what their birth and immediate postpartum looks like. And I have to say that if there's one thing that I see disrupting in a potentially and actually traumatizing way again and again in otherwise healthy, normal vaginal deliveries, it's this practice of trying to get the placenta out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's in my mind bad enough if you're one of the 85% of women in a hospital setting who does have an epidural and are unlikely to feel the deep pain of this procedure. It's still disruptive. But if you're one of those people who's made it through their labor without an epidural and somebody without consulting you, without giving you any support or guidance or eye contact or anything is as though you are numb from the ribcage down, manipulating your uterus, I just have a strong difficulty with that. And I see it again and again, and I see it happening without any discussion with the mother, no eye contact made, no attempt to ease that. And most of the time in situations where it is clearly unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just an attempt to speed up,
sure,
you know, the third stage and quote unquote get it over with. And the rationale mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. so that mom and baby can bond. In the meantime, mom can't breastfeed because she's having so much pain. So it's a rant, I know, but if I could change anything, uh-huh. I could change one thing. That would be the first thing I'd change.
Right. It's totally possible to just nurse your baby while your placenta is still in and it's going to come out. So,
not only that, it typically takes the uterus some amount of time
right.
to gather itself mm-hmm. into a coordinated mm-hmm. contraction that's going to do that. In the meantime, mm-hmm. your cervix, your uterus can hang out there and be a placeholder. So the uterus right. really needs to gather itself. You know, your brain and body need to provide the time and space and hormones
mm-hmm.
for that process to take place.
Mm-hmm. And most breastfeeding of the time, is good for that.
Right. Just yeah. being with your baby wiggling all over you is mm-hmm. good for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm on a campaign. Well, thanks so much, Jessica, for
thank you.
Coming to be with us and talk about this. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
No, I guess the kind of call to action that we have at the end of the film, I think, is something that I would encourage everyone to do. You know, when we think about where you're going to have your baby and, you know, three things kind of came to mind. We say, just ask questions, listen, and tell your story. And that goes for moms and partners, and that goes for, you know, people supporting families in birth, that we, you know, really need to ask the questions and then listen to, you know, where other people are coming from, and don't assume that your you know, values are shared. Try to, you know, check your biases and preconceived ideas and really listen and then to share your stories. So, I'm with Esther. I hope that I think about that for my daughter. I hope that in, you know, 30 years when she's having a baby, we are not still in the same place. And, it's not still such a cultural taboo, and there aren't so many barriers to accessing the kind of care that you want for your birth. So I'm hopeful. I do see signs of change. And I think that if you want to see that change happen, then there's a lot of advocacy to do. Storytelling is good for that too.
Well, I would just really encourage all of our listeners, no matter what point you are on the parenting trajectory, to see the film. It's lovely, and I think you'll find a lot of food for thought. And share it with your friends and neighbors.
So the film is going to be available on iTunes and Amazon starting September 4th, 2017, Labor Day. So we're very excited about our Labor Day launch.
Yay!
And yay, if you've seen the movie, please go ahead, go on iTunes or Amazon, wherever you get your movies, and rate it. Give us a review. We do not have a splashy publicist or anything that's helping us with this launch. This has been a really grassroots effort, and we appreciate your ratings and reviews. And we are also, if you're listening to this on Labor Day or before, then we are going to do a Facebook and or Instagram live launch party on Labor Day. So do follow us on Facebook and Instagram, Twitter, so you know when that's happening. We have a lot of great resources on the website also, whynothome.com, including a discussion guide. It's also a great film to share with family members. If you're, thinking about a home birth or planning a home birth and you have family members who aren't so sure, who are worried or whatever, I also made it with family members in mind. So I think that there's something for everybody. If you're a student, I think, nursing students, midwifery students, medical students, we're also really trying to get it into more medical and nursing schools and high schools too, because I think that you really need to kind of think about these options and that birth doesn't just have to happen in one way. When you're young, because often if you're not thinking about it until, if you don't even know that it's an option until you're pregnant, then it's kind of a long way to go from, yeah, everybody has their babies in a hospital, I'm going to have my baby in a hospital, to, maybe I'm going to do this at home in the course of just a few months. So I think that the more we can get this in front of young people with open minds who haven't, developed so many preconceived ideas, the better. So
Here. You may know that I was 18 years old when I had my daughter.
Yeah.
At home. So thanks again, Jessica. I'm so thrilled to have had you on our podcast. And I'm sure we will have links to all the things that you have talked to us about today. And I would again encourage our listeners, no matter where they're coming from, to give this film a go, because I think it really speaks to an unspoken debate that's going on in our country without the facts. So it would just be great if everybody could learn about this.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. And listeners, it was nice to be with you today. Again, please take a look at our website. We're on Facebook, and we have a newsletter you can sign up for. And we would just so appreciate any Patreon subscriptions that we can get. So take care in the meantime, and have a great Labor Day, whenever you happen to have yours, and take care.
You can subscribe to this podcast in order to hear more from us. Thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope you'll join us next time on the fourth trimester. The theme music on this podcast was created by Sean Trott. Hear more at soundcloud.com/Sean Trott. Special thanks to my true loves, my husband Ben, daughter Penelope, and baby girl Evelyn. Don't forget to share the fourth trimester podcast with any new and expecting parents. I'm Sarah Trott. Goodbye for now.
Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote this song, simple and true. I wrote this song, I'll sing a song for you. You got your wheels, you got your gears. You ride around town without any fear. You got your pedals, you got your brakes. You always wear your helmet for safety's sake. doing all that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you. Hello again, bicycle man. I know you're doing the best that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you.